The Telecommunications Operator Tender Evaluation and Selection Committee, with the approval of the Union Government, announced that Norway's Telenor Mobile Communications and Qatar's Ooredoo have been selected as the two successful applicants in the nationwide telecom license award process.
The Myanmar military have banned telecommunications firm executives from leaving the country without permission.
မေ 30 ရက်မှာ Telenor Myanmar Limited Company ကို Aten Myanmar Limited အဖြစ်စတင်အမည်ပြောင်းလဲခဲ့တာဖြစ်တယ်လို့ထုတ်ပြန်ချက်မှာဖော်ပြထားပါတယ်
Thank you for joining us for the next hour or two in this episode of Inside Myanmar Podcast. In an age of nearly limitless content, we appreciate that you're choosing to take valuable time out of your day to learn more about what is happening in Myanmar. It's vital for this story to continue to be heard by people around the world, and that starts right now with you.
Today, we are joined by Bjorn, and we are going to be delving into the case of Telenor, something that we have touched on in the past, but this interview is going to be quite special and quite extraordinary, considering the content that we are going to be discussing and the revelations that are going to be coming to light. So before we get into all of that, Bjorn, thank you very much for coming on our show and sharing what you know with us. Before we move forward, I just want to give you the chance to introduce yourself and introduce the organization you work for.
All right. My name is Bjørn Nordahl. I'm an investigative reporter. I've been working with investigative reporting for more than 35 years. I'm now working with the NRK, which is the public national broadcaster in Norway, kind of BBC in Norway, totally independent from the Norwegian government and Norwegian state, but funded by the Norwegian state. Before that, I used to work as an investigative reporter with the Norwegian Business Daily for 13 years. So I've been working a lot with finances, economy, and investment people for many, many years. I work with long projects, and this is what we're going to talk about today, is a project that's lasted for the last 2 years.
Excellent. And I want to just contextualize for the audience, because this is a slightly unusual situation for us. We are recording this episode preemptively, but by the time the episode is released, NRK will have made a significant publication, which we're here to discuss. So we don't have the benefit of knowing how that publication is going to be received at the time, but we are looking forward to it with great anticipation. So getting into this, you have been investigating Telenor, and those of us who have been following the channel would know that Telenor has come under a lot of scrutiny, particularly for the way in which it exited Myanmar following the coup, and more specifically within that, the way it seemed to be colluding with or cooperating with the military regime prior to exiting the country, and the way that it handed over a lot of data to the military regime as it exited the country. To give us a little bit of scope here, how long did you say this investigation has been going on for?
Well, it all started 2 years ago. There was a Swedish freelance journalist who came to us saying that he had a story on Telenor leaving Myanmar and that he had crucial information on Telenor's exit from the country. At that time, we didn't know much about what really happened inside Telenor after the coup. We knew that there was a big debate going on all over Eastern Asia and also in Norway about how Telenor left the country, but nobody actually did know anything about what happened inside the company at that time. So this Swedish journalist said that he had sources that could provide information that would be very interesting to dive into, to look into, to see what really took place and what considerations Telenor made when they left the country, and especially on the data, the customer data that they were said to have given to the military junta. But nobody knew exactly what had taken place, and nobody knew what kind of information they had given to the military junta in Myanmar, because that was totally forbidden to reveal from the company. And the company said, we can't tell anything about what happened after the 14th of February 2021. So all this was very interesting. And we started a process with this Swedish journalist, and we set up a team in Oslo with three people in addition to this Swedish journalist. So we have been a team of four digging into this for more than 2 years.
So it's a pretty substantial amount of time to be investigating this case. I want to make sure that we put the historical contextual things here. So let's talk about Telenor entering Myanmar. From the Myanmar side of things, obviously we see the 2010 election, which is widely boycotted by the National League for Democracy, but nevertheless results in a notionally civilian government on paper, and the period that we sometimes refer to as the sort of quasi-democracy or the pseudo-democracy, where things begin progressing. And it was not long after that Telenor enters Myanmar, which is a very, very significant step. What can you tell us from the Norwegian side would have been driving this decision to enter into a market that is pretty questionable, just emerging from a overt military dictatorship to a pseudo civilian government, which is still clearly a military dictatorship?
Pseudo civilian is quite a precise description of the situation. Well, the thing I think we should go back to when Aung San Suu Kyi was given the Nobel Peace Prize in Oslo, meaning she wasn't able to receive the prize herself. She was in custody at that time, but her sons and her husband came to Oslo to receive the prize. And ever since then, it's been a very close relation between Norway and Myanmar in terms of, you know, campaigning for the freedom of Aung San Suu Kyi, and also being very involved in the process when the country opened up. And I think it's interesting to look into what happened in 2012, actually, because at that time, things were about to kind of getting better in Myanmar, and there was a big debate on how to deal with all the debts that Myanmar had to the different countries around the world, and Norway was among those countries that had a lot of given a lot of loans to Myanmar, quite substantial amounts. And I don't know if you're familiar with a thing called the Paris Club. That's a very interesting kind of informal but still very, very powerful group of countries gathering in Paris, trying to look into what can be done with with the economic situation in underdeveloped countries, meaning that those countries like Norway, Germany, Japan, Canada, and so on, all having giving lots of loans to Myanmar, came together in Paris at the so-called Paris Club, discussing how to erase or to give in to the debt situation in Myanmar, meaning that they were trying to reduce their Myanmar's obligations to pay back their loans. And in this process, Norway took a leading role, actually, because the other countries who were discussing this debt situation in Myanmar, they said, okay, probably we will give in and reduce their loans with 60-70%. And the Norwegian delegation said, hey, how about just erasing the debt totally? From the Norwegian side, I've been talking to people who took part in that process in Paris in 2012, and actually they had to call home to talk to the Minister of Foreign Affairs to have the permission to erase Myanmar's debt totally. So Norway took a leading role already here. And to Norway, it was quite important that when the Paris Club made a press release after the meeting was over, it should be mentioned very clearly that Norway was the only country that deleted the debt 100%. So it was important for Norway to show that we care about Myanmar. We are, you know, the really good guys here. So at that time, a lot of Norwegian companies were discussing how to enter into Myanmar, and Telenor was among them. And in the period before Telenor entered Myanmar, they were given the license in 2014. Before that, a lot of Norwegian politicians went to Myanmar. The Minister of Trade came to the Minister of Trade and Commerce came to Myanmar. We gave millions of krona to establish a peace center in Myanmar. After a while, the king and the queen from Norway came to Myanmar. So there were a lot of, you know, public efforts from Norway, from the government, from the Norwegian state, to kind of soften the authorities in Myanmar to kind of give space to Norwegian companies in Myanmar.
Mm. And so I'm wondering what the various pressures would have been here, because traditionally, conventionally, we think of the corporate space and the private sector and the government as being quite separate from one another. If you have something like a fully state-owned enterprise, it might make sense to alleviate debt in order to send a state enterprise in, because the state is still going to receive a lot of money from the business that it's creating. But it's a little bit more difficult to understand what the motivations would be for a government to wipe the debt, even if many of the private sector companies in that country can then subsequently ride that goodwill and establish themselves in that recipient nation. What is the benefit for the government?
I think that you have to understand the development of Telenor, and also quite a few others, other companies in Norway that are partly state owned, because Norway has developed its economy from, I would say, an economy where the state has been very active in some of these companies, and then have let other shareholders come into these companies during the last 25, 30 years. That's the same with Equinor, who is partly state-owned, and it's the same with Telenor, who originally was 100% owned by the state developing the telecom market in Norway. But after a while, the Norwegian government decided to list the company at the Norwegian Stock Exchange in Oslo. And when it was listed, among 40% of the shares were given public, the public were given access to 40% of the shares in the company. So right now, in Telenor, the Norwegian state owns like 58% of the company, meaning they have full control over the company, but it's listed on the Norwegian Stock Exchange, and it has given, the payout for its shareholders per share has been extraordinary for the last 20 years. It's been a very successful listing. So partially it's good for the Norwegian government to enter into it's absolutely a virgin-like market in Myanmar. For Telenor to enter here, it's like we have possibilities both for the states as a major shareholder, but also for all those who are shareholders, for 40% of the shareholders that are private equity companies, private persons. So it's a win-win situation both for the states and for the private shareholders in Telenor to enter into this very interesting market.
And so I'm wondering, behind the scenes here, when the Norwegians are deciding, okay, maybe we'll not only reduce the debt by 60-70%, but in fact we'll just wipe the debt entirely, would that have been done in consultation with Myanmar, with the understanding that this is only going to happen if Myanmar agrees that they are going to allow Norwegian companies to invest? Or would it have been less overt? Would they have wiped the debt and then just sort of hoped that the junta would turn around and say, yeah, okay, we'll do you a favor because you did us a favor?
No, I don't think that you will find anyone who will admit that there was a connection between wiping out the debt and the entrance of Norwegian companies. But this is the subtitle here, right? You do something and there is a clear understanding that we do this because we kind of like to massage the junta to open up for Norwegian companies. And the interesting thing is that when the license was on auction in Myanmar, there were like 100, or to be precise, 96 different companies around the world who bid for the license in Myanmar. And among those 96, only two were picked to have the license, and Telenor was one of those two. So you just have to ask yourself, why did the junta in Myanmar decide to give the license to Telenor as one of like 100 bidders for the license? It's quite interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So there's an implication that there was a very deliberate, not necessarily collusion, but that things were very carefully arranged and organized to achieve a Norwegian entrance into the Myanmar market, we could say.
Yeah, I don't think you will find anyone who will say that the Norwegian government said, if you do this, we will do that. Yeah. If we erase the debt or wipe out your debt, you will give us. Yeah, you won't find anyone who will admit that was kind of, or even said in the back, behind the scenes. But the impression is that Norway did a lot to prepare for Telenor to enter Myanmar. The Norwegian government did a lot to emphasize to the authorities in Myanmar that we are here, we are going to support you, we are very interested in the Myanmar market, and we are also going to support the democratic process in Myanmar. So maybe if you open up and let us in, we can be there for you.
Mm. Fair enough. And so the sort of big question then, in terms of the revenue that would have been raised as a result of this, was this overall a profitable move? Did the entrance of Telenor pay more than wiping the debt cost?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, not in any other market that Telenor has entered during the last 30 years has been, I mean, the profit or it's been, it became profitable so fast in Myanmar compared to no other markets. It was, I mean, it was extraordinary. Even in 2016, Telenor could, I mean, the result for Telenor in 2016 was so good, it could pay back to their shareholders a lot of money. So it was profitable very, very quick.
Wow. So this was a very good investment as far as Norway was concerned. This was a good move.
Oh yeah, sure. And they went public with that. They said this is extraordinary, and this market is, I mean, we are talking about more or less 55 million people, and nobody had cell phones. Nobody had connection, or I mean, the market was absolutely like a, it was, you use the expression virgin market or something like that, but it was absolutely so interesting for, I mean, that's why 100 international telecom companies wanted to enter Myanmar, because it was so, I mean, so interesting for doing, people were so interested in doing business there, because the, yeah, the profits would come very quick.
And so this is the sort of clinching point, because, you know, we have the benefit of hindsight. We can say, well, we saw the military coup of 2021. But obviously, even when Telenor enters, contextually, you know, as we're saying here, it was a quasi-civilian, pseudo-civilian government. It was still very much military-controlled. And Telenor entered before the 2015 elections, when, in a surprising turn of events, the military did in fact allow the NLD to take more or less control of the government, with, you know, certain caveats and limitations. And so what was with the thinking? I understand this is obviously very profitable, and I understand there's a very easy argument to be made that the people of Myanmar will be benefited by providing them with access to the internet, access to external information, access to improved communication, e-commerce, and so on. But understanding that you're going into a country that has historically been a very repressive military regime, would there have been any considerations made either by the Norwegian government or by the administration of Telenor to think, what happens if something in this country goes backwards, if they do not continue to open up and democratize, but in fact the situation gets worse? Would there have been a contingency plan?
Well, that is a very interesting question, and that's what we've been asking Telenor about after the coup, and when we have been digging into this story. What were your exit plan, actually, if something bad happened in the country? It seems like they were so eager to get into this market that those considerations were not properly made. When they woke up on the 1st of February in 2021 and the coup was a fact, it seems to me that they were kind of surprised, or they would say, well, we knew that something was going on when, at the end of January, we had to set up a crisis team to look into things. But it's, to me, it seems like they were kind of surprised that these things could happen in Myanmar, and that their exit plans were not very well prepared.
Really?
Yeah, sure.
Telenor operates in some countries that are known for political instability, either Telenor itself or a subsidiary that is, you know, wholly or partially owned by Telenor. But they have engagement in a lot of countries that have faced crises of political corruption and instability, that have faced coups. Surely Telenor would have experience with this type of problem.
Yeah, sure. And that's what really surprises me as well, because when we talk to experts on this, saying, hey, what do you think about Telenor's exit from Myanmar? And Telenor, they give a lot of excuses on what they've done. We can talk about that later. Yeah. But the experts say, hey, why didn't they prepare better? Why didn't they have a plan to, for instance, isolate the local employees from sensitive data? Why didn't they have a plan for that? So they could say, look, the local employees are not involved in handling sensitive data. They didn't. And I mean, I've been talking to people who've been working with these questions internationally for many years, and they're quite surprised that Telenor didn't do anything to prepare themselves.
So, okay, so that's something that we can get into, like what technical solutions do exist, but I think this is a good juncture to just start getting into what happened. So let's fast forward to 2021. We have the coup on the 1st of February, and Telenor, for that two-week period until the 14th of February, there's very questionable behavior. We hopefully you can shed light on this, but we did not previously have a full understanding. The image that we had was that Telenor was being given governmental instructions by the military that they did not legally have the authority to refuse, and that they were complying to the bare minimum that that the military was compelling them to comply to. Does that comport with what your research has found?
Yeah, what happened before the 14th of February is, well, could be, let's say from the coup until the 14th of February, there is kind of information accessible on what Telenor did and did not do, because they published on their own website that they had to shut down the network and they had to close the mobile network for all of the country, and that they had to shut down Facebook and so on, social media platforms. That is quite well known, but it's what happened after the 14th of February when they were giving direct instructions from La Junta that they could not reveal anything of what was going on between the Junta and Telenor. And that is a period of 14 months. That is what we have been digging into, what happened from the 14th of February until the 25th of March when they left the country the year after. And that's what's really interesting, because we know that Telenor had to do this and that and close, shut down networks, which the other internet providers also had to do. But that's not so interesting what they did before the 14th. What's interesting is what they did after that. They were told not to do anything, to reveal anything. And that's what we really have been digging into.
Okay. So that's very interesting, because I do remember that period. Because Telenor and others were putting information out, telling people ahead of time that, you know, we've received an instruction from the military, we have to shut down the internet at this time until that time. And the military were obviously not happy that people were able to plan around the internet shutdowns. So I remember when the military realized that they have to stop the companies from communicating at all. But are you suggesting that As a result of that, did Telenor have some sort of internal system that they stopped updating as well? Did Telenor stop? Is there an oversight in Norway over Telenor's activities? If it's government majority owned, I would assume there is government oversight over what Telenor does. Was Telenor not giving information to the Norwegian government? Was there a shift there?
Yeah, this is very interesting, because on the 14th of February, the CEO of Telenor, Sigve Brekke, went on television in Norway. It's on the NRK, actually, my company. And he was asked a lot about what are you actually doing in in Myanmar at the moment. Why are you shutting down Facebook? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? And he said, from now on, I can't say anything. I can't say anything about what we are doing and what considerations we are making in Myanmar. He was asked a lot of questions on the customer data, on what they would do with the social media and so on and so on. And the answer was still the same. I can't say anything. But the thing is, and that is what we are really trying to find out, and we are going to ask the Minister of Trade and Commerce, who was in charge at that time, what did you actually know about this?
Mm.
How informed were you? What did Telenor tell you about the situation, and why didn't, or did you inform the Norwegian Parliament about this afterwards? We have found out, we have mapped all the meetings that were held between Telenor and the Ministry of Trade and Commerce. And there were around 30 meetings, which is quite a high number compared to, I mean, normal situation. And but we don't know the content of those meetings. What happened between Telenor and the Norwegian government at that time? And that is very, very interesting. How well informed were the Norwegian government? What did Telenor tell them? What did Telenor say about crucial, sensitive customer data that they had in their possession? And what were given to the junta? This is what we really want to know more about. We know what they did, and I can tell you more about that later. Mm-hmm. But what did they tell the Norwegian government? It's very interesting.
And so I want to, just at this point, from the journalistic perspective, I understand, obviously, you've reached out to Telenor for official comment. And I assume you've also reached out to the Norwegian government for official comment. Have they responded to you? Have they responded in a satisfactory way?
Split this into two, because yes, we have been in touch with Telenor for several weeks now. It's an ongoing process. We are still debating some of our findings, but we are still waiting to confront the Minister of Trade and Commerce, because we want to publish the story first, mm-hmm. and kind of get a public reaction from the Norwegian audience and from the opposition in the parliament. And then we will try to reach out to the Minister of Trade and Commerce and the Ministry of Trade and Commerce, who is responsible for the ownership in Telenor. So we are still waiting for the response from the Norwegian government, which will be a kind of follow-up. But we have had a lot of contact with Telenor. We have made two big interviews with the CEO of Telenor Myanmar, Jon Omen Revhaug. And the last interview was made in the middle of July, confronting him with all the facts that we have revealed during our work for the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm. And just as a side, because you said that the content of the meetings that were held between Telenor and the ministry were sealed. Is it normal for those types of meetings to be publicly available, or would they automatically be sealed as state secrets?
It varies. Some of them could. Well, I mean. Some of them are and not controversial at all. So then they could tell, yeah, sure, we talked about this and that and how to run this company and so on. But when it comes to controversial themes like this, I mean, we are talking about around 700 employees in Myanmar, and Telenor claims that if they say anything about what they do or what they don't do or how they deal with the data, these people would be in danger. So that's been the main answer when we ask them about the contents of this meeting as well. We can't reveal anything because it's confidential, and it will have consequences for our employees in Myanmar. That's the standard answer from Telenor.
Okay, fair enough. So then let's dive into what it is that you have found and what it is that Telenor did. I can't really ask too many questions because I don't know what the background is. So I'm sort of have to ask you to just give us the narrative of what it was that Telenor to the best of your research was doing for that 14-month period.
Yeah, sure. I can say that in our position, we have more than 750 documents containing conversations between Telenor and the junta from the period after the coup and until Telenor left the country in March 2022. Those documents are more or less requests from the junta to Telenor, where there are two kind of requests. It's authority requests, which will be about network shutting down, internet shutting down, Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, things like that. Those are authority requests, a lot of them, and Telenor's response to those requests. And the other kind of requests are those called direct requests concerning crucial teledata on private customers, individual private customers. For instance, the junta would say, we have this number, we want to know the owner of this number, we want to know his address, we want to know his last location, and we want to know his call log, meaning who has been calling and who has he called. Yeah. And that is probably the most controversial and most interesting part of the documentation. Those documents would also be Telenor's response to the request from the authorities, meaning their answer. This is how this customer's name, or at least when they know the customer's name. Many times they don't, but they will give away all those information, all that information to the junta. And the thing is that many of these people that the junta asked information on, the teledata on, are people who are very active in the disobedient movement and also in the resistant movement like PDF. So the thing is that what we can see is that there is a direct link between Telenor giving away crucial information and the consequences for people working against the junta, people within the civilian disobedient movement, and also very central politicians, and also people with the PDF who were really attacking the junta in a very critical period. So giving away this information, Telenor probably has provided a possibility for the junta to track down the people in the opposition.
Mm. Absolutely. So the first question is, how much verifiable harm do we have? Because obviously all of this stuff is going to be difficult to track. It's going to be difficult to quantify. Are there any cases where we know for a fact that this information was used to arrest an individual or target an individual?
Well, let's turn to June 2021 as an example. Mm-hmm. Telenor receives a request from the junta to give away information on one specific number. According to Telenor itself, this number belongs to an imprisoned member of the People's Defense Force, the PDF. And Telenor makes an analysis on its own. And the bottom line is these data, this information connected to this specific number from this PDF member will be used to identify and potential arrest new contacts. And so they say, as a bottom line, the impact of sharing this information is extremely high.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning this is Telenor's analysis on the situation. They're saying directly that the junta is using telecom data to map the networks of the democracy fighters.
Okay. And so I want to know who received this, because you said this is a Telenor analysis. Did Telenor do this analysis for the Norwegian government? Or did they just do it to have it for themselves internally? What was the purpose of this analysis?
Well, Telenor put together a team to handle all those requests from the junta. And every time they received a request from the junta, this team had to handle it. And those people inside the team were, you know, like lawyers, people working with human rights, people working with, of course, local legislation. I mean, all kinds of considerations were made by that team for each request. And Telenor's explanation is that they wanted to document for the future what they had done and what consideration that were made. And it was made probably for internal use, but also for the record to prove that they had dealt with the requests in a proper way. But the thing is that those considerations contain clear analysis on the impact that these data, or what would happen with these data if they were giving to the junta. And you can see that the people from the human resources side, they would say, don't do it.
Mm.
But the people from the legal side would say, we can't refuse. So, and the people from the legal side, I mean, the lawyers, they would always win the discussion every time. And when we ask Telenor about this, did you ever say no to anything that you were asked to give out to the junta? And they admit, we never said no.
So the legal is a really interesting one. And this is it's such an unusual case because it's majority government owned entity, but it's operating overseas. In theory, of course, because it is a company registered in Myanmar, it is subject to the laws of Myanmar. But it is still a Norwegian company that's headquartered in Norway and which is owned majority by the Norwegian state. If there is a conflict between the legal requirements of Norway and the legal requirements of Myanmar, what is the expectation on the company?
Well, that's the most important and interesting thing in these documents, that they would always say that the local legislation has to be considered.
Okay.
They always say that we are under military law in Myanmar, and if we don't comply to the requirements from the junta, it will affect our local employees and put them into danger, probably into prison and life sentences or things like that, even death. So if we don't comply, we have to consider that that will be serious consequences for our local employees. So that's the two main arguments. Norwegian legislation does not come into consideration here at all, and that's a very good question, because why we're not the Norwegian? I mean, the Norwegian legislation and the Norwegian tradition of complying to human rights and things like that. Why didn't they consider that? No, they always say there are two arguments here. We are under military law in Myanmar. We have to accept that. And if you don't accept that, it will affect our local employees. So the consideration was, we apply and we take care of our own people in Myanmar, 700 people, which made the situation... It's quite a dilemma, but I mean, the people from the legal department always won the discussion, so to speak.
So this then raises a subsequent question: if there is conflict between Norwegian law and Myanmar law, and Telenor has chosen to respect the local law of the country in which they operate, are they not still potentially subject and liable to legal action taken by the Norwegian legal system for their failures to uphold Norwegian standards of human rights?
That remains to be seen. I mean, we are very curious about exploring that question, because a lot of experts we have been talking to says that Telenor has to be taken to an international court to check out if they have to be responsible for what they've done. And the answer so far has not been given. I mean, because people do not know what Telenor actually have done in Myanmar during this period, because it's been in the dark. It's just now, when we are about to publish this story, that people will know what really took place.
Wow. So this is a very, very complicated thing. And so let's look at the devil's advocacy then. They do have a very large number. I think you said 700 employees locally engaged in Myanmar. And I think we can agree that the threat to the safety, the security, the freedom, and the lives of those people is a very real and very legitimate threat. Does Telenor not have a responsibility to its employees, the people that it offered to give jobs and ostensibly, you know, security and safety to say, we are not going to put these people into harm's way?
Yeah, and that's not for me to answer, but what people that are working with these issues say is that if Telenor were better prepared, they would have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
They would have a possibility to protect their local employees. If they had made a firewall between the Norwegian leadership, the Norwegian management, which would be Norwegian citizens, not local employees, if they had made a firewall between the Norwegian management and the local employees, they could have avoided the situation. That's what experts say. They could have said that the data are stored in Oslo, in Norway, mm-hmm. at the main quarters. And they could have said that the local employees are not dealing with these matters at all. They are not involved. So if you have to prosecute anyone, that would be the Norwegian management and not the local employees.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way to solve it. But it doesn't seem to me that Telenor were prepared on things like that.
Yeah. And so with the data themselves, so obviously the data was stored locally, which is, you know, logistically simpler. But the military demanded the data. And when Telenor left, this was something that we were conjecturing about back in 2022. It's something that we still, you know, didn't have a clear picture on. Because Telenor had built up a relatively positive image by trying to forewarn people of when the blackouts were going to happen in the early days of the coup and doing minimal compliance and so on, there was a hope that what Telenor was going to do was either wipe their data registries and servers before they hand over the control to the military so the military don't have anything, or encrypt them in some way, which, you know, you should be doing for safety and security anyway, and simply refusing to hand over the decryption keys, which, again, you could argue, well, the local employees don't have the decryption keys because it was encrypted by the Norwegian executives. Did Telenor do either of these things? Did they attempt to do either of these things? Do we have any evidence of internal discussion of these types of options to stymie the efforts of the military to gain access to these data when Telenor left the country?
We've been asking Telenor about that, and they say that they made a lot of considerations in cooperations with big international security firms trying to find technical solutions to erase the datas. Or encrypt the datas. They said that, yeah, technically we could probably do that kind of remote erase thing from made by some security companies outside Telenor and outside Myanmar. But the conclusion was that if we do that, the junta will consider that as a hostile action, and it would affect our local employees, so we couldn't do that.
Interesting.
But they made, I mean, they had a long-term cooperation with international security companies trying to find a solution to that, and they found out, we could do it, and we could probably also just leave the country, but if we do that, it will affect 700 local employees.
And I know it's a large number, and I know it's a long shot, but it just occurs to me as a question worth putting out there. If a Norwegian company that is owned by the state says, we have 700 locally engaged employees, and those employees are endangered in safety, security, and life as a result of their employment with us and as a result of us trying to maintain Norwegian standards and Norwegian laws and Norwegian human rights principles, would there not have been, for example, recourse for Telenor to say the best thing that we can do is to try to extract these 700 people who work for us and relocate them to Norway and give them protection status because by working with us, we have put them in danger? Would that ever have been a possibility?
I think that has been also been a consideration from Telenor, but you know, some of those local employees have been moved from Myanmar to other countries and are still working with Telenor in other countries. But as you probably would consider yourself, if I have to leave the country, what about my family?
Yes.
What about my friends?
Yes.
What about my network? So even though they could offer immigration plan for the local employees, many of them would say that it's impossible for us to leave Myanmar because of our connections to the country.
Mm. But so at the very least, we can say that there was some thought given to this type of option.
Yeah, and some were given the possibility to leave the country organized
but
by Telenor.
On the technical side of things, can you explain, other than the firewall, which we've been discussing, were there other types of solutions that Telenor could have implemented before the coup in preparation? Or more importantly, is there any technological response that they could have made after the coup in that short space of time to say, okay, we need to prepare ourselves for the inevitability that we cannot remain in this country, and we want to make sure that we can extract ourselves from this country without bringing harm to our employees and without bringing harm to Myanmar society in general. Were there technical solutions available that Telenor chose not to utilize?
Well, the only thing I know about this is what they tell us, mm-hmm. as what Telenor tells us. But I'm not really a technical guy. Okay. We have a data journalist on our team who has been dealing with all these data from Telenor, so he could probably answer that question. Mm-hmm. But what I know is that Telenor say that they explored a lot of possibilities how to avoid giving data to the junta, mm-hmm. and they explored in cooperation with big security companies outside Myanmar, possibilities to deal with the requests and or not to deal with the requests and how to handle the data so they didn't have to give it away to the junta. But as far as I know, they always reach the same conclusion that it's not possible to do that because it's too risky.
So at the end of the day, when Telenor, the Norwegian side of it, you know, leaves, but the infrastructure remains in the country, the employees remain in the country, or most of them, and everything is handed over to the military. What did that look like? Are we actually looking at the military actually being given access to potentially years worth or months worth of phone records, unencrypted, searchable by name, searchable by phone number, and basically everything that the military has been dreaming of?
Yeah, the thing is that when we look into these requests coming from the junta to the to Telenor, it's quite specific. I mean, there are no coincidences here. There are a reason why they ask for these specific numbers. I mean, I can give you one example from March 2021, which is really astonishing. There is a request in the middle of March 2021, and it looks quite, not so important. I mean, why do they ask for information on this number? It's a certain number. It's they ask for name, address, last location, and first and foremost, the call log. And the number is linked to a doctor, a pathologist at Yangon General Hospital, which is Myanmar's biggest hospital, as you might know. And you could ask yourself, why do they want information on this number? The thing is that this medical doctor, she's very close linked to Aung San Suu Kyi. In fact, they are working together in the charitable trust who is financing the renovation of the hospital. So they are very this doctor is very close to Aung San Suu Kyi. And the interesting thing is that Telenor asked itself the same question: why do they want this number? And they give this answer, which is very, very interesting. They say, Telenor say in their analysis, it's likely that this number will be used to support the military examinations of the criminal case against Aung San Suu Kyi.
The case that we know to be fraudulent, designed to put her in prison.
Yeah. So Telenor deliberately give away information that can be used by the military to prosecute Aung San Suu Kyi.
Wow. It's ironic coming from Norway, the country where the Nobel Peace Prize is awarded.
Yeah, and you know, we just had to follow up this, and we met with Aung San Suu Kyi's son, Kim Aris, in London to show him our findings. And it was a very very strong meeting. He was shocked when we gave him the information, and his reaction was, it's terrible that the country that always has supported my mother would give away this kind of information helping the junta. That's his reaction.
It's very disturbing to hear, and And of course, the question also has to come up, the decisions that were being made at Telenor, what is the extent to which the government of the day would have been involved? Clearly, they're being informed because, as you say, they're having a very high volume of meetings. But the question is this a case of Telenor simply informing the government what they're doing? Or is the government of Norway in a position to instruct Telenor in what kind of steps it must take in order to uphold, you know, Norwegian standards and the principles of the government?
Well, that's a two-part question, and I'll try to explain in two stages here. First, when we ask Telenor about this, they say that we don't discuss each request with the government. So they say we were given the freedom to handle this ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then I ask them, but were the government informed on what really took place in Myanmar? What kind of information you were giving away? And they answer in a general way saying, yes, they were informed. They were very well informed of the dilemmas we were in. So that's one thing. Then it's about how is it possible for the Norwegian government to instruct Telenor to handle differently than they mm-hmm. did in this situation? And the answer to that really comes from the Minister of Trade and Commerce. He gave it to the National Assembly. Actually, he was asked about the same thing in the National Assembly, mm-hmm. and he said, "We will not instruct Telenor. They have to handle with this themselves. It's not Norwegian policy to involve in the direct management of the company that we are invested in." So the official Norwegian policy in terms of ownership is that we are owners, but we do not directly involved in the management of the company.
So what is the nature of ownership then in this context? Is it more that the state is invested in Telenor and therefore the state receives revenue as Telenor's stock price increases? Or is there something else? Because it seems a little bit strange to have a company, let it go private, put it on the stock market, but retain control over it, retain majority ownership over it, and yet refuse on principle to play a guiding role in that company.
Mm. Yeah, and it's interesting that you ask that because some would say, why were the Norwegian government so involved when Telenor entered the country and not involved when they excited the country?
Yeah.
I mean, it seems to be a contradiction in terms, right? Mm. Because they put a lot of effort to get Telenor established in Myanmar. But when the going got tough, they really pulled out and said, this is Telenor's responsibility. We can't involve in that. But you have to consider that the ownership, the state ownership in the Norwegian enterprises like Equinor and Telenor and Yara and so on, they are all stock-listed companies, but there is a history behind. I mean, these companies used to be fully owned by the state, and at one time they decided to go public with a listing, and so there is, I mean, there is some. I think there are kind of mixed feelings about this. Should they give up their ownership in full, or should they stay on board? But if they stay on board, why do they not give more instructions on how to run the company? It's complicated.
Because the company is a little bit seen as an extension of the Norwegian government, because it is majority Norwegian owned. I would go so far as to say Telenor is probably the most internationally well-known Norwegian brand, and therefore there is a certain, I think, expectation that Telenor as an entity is going to operate in line with the principles that Norway has spent a very long time associating itself with and establishing as part of its foreign policy and domestic policy. So it would feel like a very strange disconnect if you have a Norwegian brand that is readily accepted around the world, largely because it is a Norwegian brand that it is associated with the positive image that we have of the Norwegian state, but it does not have any legal obligation to hold itself to the principles of the Norwegian state, and the Norwegian state does not have the ability to guide it in that direction either. Almost false advertising in a sense.
Yeah, and the thing is that when you look into the marketing plan that Telenor made in Myanmar, we've been talking to sources who worked with the marketing plan in Myanmar. The headline was "Let's go with trust." Mm. Let's go with Norwegian values, human rights principles. You can trust Telenor because it's Norwegian. Norway's got a long story on human rights, being involved in lots of peace processes around the world and things like that. So let's go with trust. Let's tell people in Myanmar that, you have been living in a country with the 70 year of military rule, but now we are here. So you can trust us. If you don't trust anyone else, you can trust us. That was, and when you talk to the CEO in Telenor Myanmar, Revhaug, he admits, yes, that was our plan, our goal, to tell people that they could trust us. And also he said that we came to Myanmar not only to do business but to make a difference. Yeah, to help to build a democracy in the country and so on. The fall is even bigger and heavier when you consider this. I would say, image that people have of Telenor and of Norway.
Yeah, and so this is another thing that you sort of touched on here, and I do wonder about it. Obviously, you wouldn't know, and I wouldn't know, and nobody would really know. But considering the work that the Norwegian state was putting into getting Telenor to enter Myanmar, and considering the amount of communication that was happening between Telenor and the state, is it not possible, and hopefully maybe as a result of your documentary, the state will respond and shed some light on this, but is it not possible that the state was also working behind the scenes to try to leverage the military in some way, or pressure them to try to protect the Telenor workers and try to protect the data and things like this? Or do we know for a fact that no, the Norwegian state did not want to touch what was going on in Myanmar?
Well, I can only tell you what the Minister of Trade and Commerce told the Norwegian Assembly. And he said that the situation is terrible. We do not want to involve directly in this as a government. We have to stick to the principles we have for state ownership in these companies, and that is to leave the decisions to the management in the company. That's the only thing I can say. I don't know anything about what took place behind the scenes between Norway and Myanmar, but I don't think that it's very easy to discuss anything with the junta in Myanmar.
Yes. Yes. Although they do tend to understand money. I assume they're not particularly heavily invested in Myanmar. I would assume that the oil fund, for example, does not have any Myanmar investments.
No, sure not.
Yeah.
We have a lot of debate on what the oil fund can do and not do, but I think Myanmar is totally off the list.
Yes, and that's wise. Although, then again, that also raises this question. From an hour ago, I had the pleasure of speaking with Kjell Bondevik, and I believe he played an instrumental role in setting up ethics standards around the application of the oil fund so that it cannot just be thrown at third world dictatorships, which is a good thing. But if you have a situation where you have decided that the money of the country cannot be invested with these people because they are a dictatorship, why then is it possible for the money of a semi-private entity that is owned by the country to be invested with those same people?
Yeah. Well, it's not for me to answer that question because that's above my payroll.
Yeah, that's fair enough. That's fair enough.
I think that the intention of entering Myanmar was kind of divided into two. Mm. They saw a very potential, strong new market with, I mean, there were no competitors at all in this. They didn't have to do any, they didn't have to buy any companies to get into the to Myanmar. Everything was blank. It was open. It was a huge business possibility. That's one of the reasons they came there. And the other was, to be frank, I think that they really wanted to do something good in the country. I really think that they wanted to connect people in Myanmar so that they could have a voice in the democratic process in the country. But that kind of ambition was probably not very well analyzed as long as the junta was still, or the old general was still there behind the scenes and pulling the strings.
Because it is tragic. I lived there, and I didn't see the explosion in technology that happened after about 2010, although many of my friends were there and they did see it. But even what I saw, the impact that these companies had, like Telenor, like Ooredoo, the ability of people to communicate, to keep in touch with their families, to run businesses, the explosion of e-commerce in the country, and the ability of an individual to say, I don't have to be dependent on someone else. I can make a thing and I can sell it on the internet and people can see it and they can buy it. It genuinely revolutionized people's lives. And I do think that Telenor did manage in those years before the coup, I do think they did manage to do a significant amount of good in the country. Although I would say that the incessant spam SMSs that they would send out were very, very annoying. I'm still very angry about that. That's a private issue. But I think they did do a lot of good. It's just, as you say, it was not planned out properly and accurately. But I wonder, and I know that you've been taking a very neutral stance, you've been taking a very objective stance, and I don't mean to put you out of your comfort zone, but I am wondering, do you have a personal opinion, having looked at all of this, on whether or not Telenor should have just rejected the idea of going into Myanmar in the first place, or do you think fundamentally the idea was good, they just should have put more work into contingencies?
Well, my opinion is not so very important here. My job is to reel the facts, to bring out the story on what happened and make people think for themselves. But when you see the reactions from others, obviously things could have been done differently. That's what I really want to say, that you have to listen to all these people who are going to comment on this after we have published, because there are going to be strong opinions on this after the publication. And for me, it's most what I feel or what I think about Telenor in Myanmar is not so important. It's more that when I can bring this story together with my colleagues in this team, which is important for me to emphasize, this is not a one man band here. It's a team behind. But when we bring this story, I think that it will speak for itself, and I think that the reactions that will come will be strong. I hope. Yeah. I really hope that there will be strong reactions after the publication. So my opinions, doesn't matter anyhow. What I'm just journalist reporting,
and I respect that, and I respect your position on that. But it's sort of inevitable that this would come up. We'll have to sort of touch this because the fact of the matter is also that there is an election coming up in Norway next month on the 8th of September, yeah. I believe. And it is also the case that the government, unless I'm mistaken, the government of Norway today is the same government that was in power when Telenor exited the country with all the disastrous effects that we've discussed, and was also the same government that was responsible for expunging Myanmar's debt to allow Telenor to enter the country in the first place. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's the Labour government all the way. We had a Conservative government between 2013 and 2021. But when Telenor entered Myanmar, it was Labour. And when they excited the country, it was Labour. And it's still Labour. And the guy who was the Minister of Trade and Commerce, he's now second top guy in the Labour Party and looked upon as the one who will probably take over the party when the present leader is resigning. But I think maybe this could affect the campaigning for the election in September. Probably there will be people in the opposition who are very interested in this story.
I imagine they would be. And so this is fascinating in that sense that it really is highlighting the perception of the connection between the government and Telenor, that even though the government says, well, we don't interfere with Telenor's affairs, we allow them to operate independently, your report focuses on the actions of Telenor as it operated in Myanmar, and yet you're saying that you are reasonably confident that this report on what Telenor has done is going to have these ramifications, is going to lead to a public backlash against the government of the time. I'm wondering what the causation there is. Do you feel that the Norwegian public is likely to react to this? We don't know at the time, it hasn't been published yet, but is likely to react in the sense that they wish the government had acted to instruct Telenor in what to do? Or do you feel that there's some other reason that the public would be upset with the government for this?
Well, I think that there is already among certain politicians and certain opposition groups in Norway a claim that the exit of Telenor from Myanmar should be scrutinized by an independent part. There should be an investigation going on what really happened when Telenor exited the country. This claim will be even stronger and probably reach another level after we have published this. So what we probably can see is, or think or hope will happen, is that there will be an independent investigation, probably from the Control and Constitution Committee in the Parliament or someone else, who will look into what really happened after Telenor exited Myanmar. And after that, well, we can talk about, the international judge in Strasbourg and things like that.
Yes.
But I think, or I hope that the story will affect that there will be consequences. As a journalist, you always hope for consequences. Otherwise our reporting is meaningless. I mean, we do hope that someone really want to scrutinize Telenor and investigate what happened. And that has to be an independent group of people doing that.
And just for context, my understanding is that within Norway, this is something that people know about, the Telenor exit from Myanmar and the subsequent sort of catastrophe. Even without your report, even without the depths that you've gone into, this is something that people in the country do have an awareness of. And there is, how should I put it, that there is displeasure among the Norwegian population with how Telenor handled the coup. Is that correct?
Yeah, first of all, we have a quite big Burmese diaspora in Norway. Mm-hmm. And as you probably know, the radio station Voice of Burma has been active from Oslo for many years. And there has been a Burma committee working especially for Myanmar and the Burmese people from Oslo. So the attention is quite high in Norway also because we have this, you know, this long history with when Aung San Suu Kyi was given the Nobel Peace Prize. You know, people know about Myanmar and they care about Myanmar. My impression is that the younger generation probably does not care so much, but this is a possibility to awake the younger people in Norway as well. Because they care about Telenor and they care about cell phones and they care about how their private lives are affected with Telenor.
Absolutely. And I'm wondering, besides just the election, do you think that there might be the possibility as a result of this report, and if there is an independent investigation, that there could be legislative change that would force Telenor, potentially even other Norwegian companies, to maintain certain ethical standards, certain privacy and security standards to protect civilians from rogue governments?
Yeah, that remains to be seen. But as I said, we hope for consequences, mm-hmm. and I hope that they really will look into... I think it's very interesting to see how they will react on what should politicians, what should the government really do in situations like this, because this is not a normal situation for a Norwegian state-owned company in a foreign country. This is emergency, and should they have other kind of rules, mm-hmm. other kinds of possibilities to just take action when things like this happened. I hope that will be a part of the discussion after our publication.
Mm-hmm. And again, it's just so impactful. I'm looking at my calendar here. So you're slated for publication 2 weekends before the election. Now, I wonder how voting works in Norway, because I don't understand. Here in Australia, for example, you can actually vote 2 weeks or 3 weeks before the day of the election, and an increasing number of people do that. So you can do the same. So
yeah.
Is it possible then that there are going to be people in Norway who will vote before you've released this story?
Yeah, probably, yes. It's been open for a while now, and you can pre-vote, I think, 4 weeks before the election something like that. And from the 11th of August until the 5th of September, you can pre-vote.
So 4 weeks. So pre-voting starts 4 weeks before the election. Okay. So then that's that question then. How much of an impact in the actual election do you think this will have? Because we're releasing a bombshell like this 2 weeks before an election traditionally is something that that politicians, you know, have nightmares about. But with the number of people who would already have pre-voted, do you think that a story like this has the possibility of losing the election for the Labour government?
Okay. In the last election in 2021, uh-huh. they were given 1.6 million pre-votes in Norway. For the whole country, it's 4.3 million people who can vote.
4.3 million. Okay. So the pre-vote is a very significant slice of the pie.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Interesting. What prediction can we make? Like, which political parties would be benefiting? Høyre, I believe, were the party who were in the middle between Telenor entering and exiting the country. Would they be likely to pick up support here, or...?
Yeah, I think so. About Høyre and the Liberal Party, who has been very engaged in the case, asking several questions in the parliament to the Minister of Trade and Commerce. If the opposition or anyone else, a member of the parliament, has a question, there is a certain day that the ministers from different departments would come to, from the different ministries will come and answer questions in the parliament. And the Liberal Party has been quite active asking questions about Telenor in Myanmar. And also the right party, Fremskrittspartiet, the Progression Party, I would say, who is just right for the Conservative Party, would also pick up this case, I think.
Interesting. So there is already political pressure within the parliament to get answers on this.
Yeah, and there are people very concerned about Telenor's role in Myanmar. It's been all the way since they left the country in 2021.
Fascinating. So, I mean, we'll be following, obviously, not only the release of the report, but also to see what long-term ramifications this is going to have and whether this will even lead to international judicial responses. Certainly that would be very good, because as you point out, there are people who were arrested and very likely people who are dead as a result of the information that was handed over to the military.
Yeah, and I can reveal that we will going to name a certain well-known politician who was murdered by the junta after he was arrested. And 18 days before he was arrested, Telenor gave away his information to the junta. So I think people will really react on that, because that was a big international story when he was killed by the junta.
And moreover, direct evidence and direct connection to the Telenor's activities.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing we can prove is that the junta asked for his information in October 2021. They gave it to the junta, which was, you know, his call logs and things like that. And the junta said and still says in their own documents that they use this information to map the networks of the opposition. And 18 days after they gave away his information, he was arrested.
Wow.
And after that, he was killed.
That's incredible. We can only wait with anticipation. Obviously, by the time this has been released, the documentary will be out, and we will link to it underneath this episode so that people will be able to go to it and find it.
Yeah, sure.
That being said, will your documentary have an English language option?
Well, we are working on that at the moment. We have discussed it, and we think it's important because we have connections with, you know, other countries and other media houses. So probably there will be maybe a short version of the online story available. What we do with the podcast, it's more uncertain, but we will look into it, and hopefully there is a solution in English as well.
Yeah, even subtitles. Subtitles would be fine. We would just like to.
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I think that covers the majority of what we came here to discuss. And I think it's been a very, very insightful discussion, a very sort of upsetting discussion to understand just what was going on and just how many opportunities were not taken to alleviate the suffering. But we're very hopeful that consequences will come, and that an investigation will be held, and that improvements will be made going forward. But before we finish the episode, we always give the opportunity to our guest to directly address our audience, whoever may be listening, private sector, public sector, government sector. If you have any message that you'd like to share, please do.
I mean, just think that in general, independent journalism is more important than ever. And investigative journalism in particular, because right now there are so many people attacking independent journalism. And there are so many people questioning on what I would call old-fashioned journalism. But I think this is the only way to protect our society, our democracies, because if we do not work like this independently and investigate and report independently on what's taking place, both in private sector and public sector, our democracy will suffer. And this is just a small piece on what can be done, but there are journalists all around the world who are being attacked because there are journalists and trying to report independently on governments and also on private companies. So please support independent journalism in the time to come.
Before we sign off, I want to take this opportunity to sincerely thank those of you who have chosen to contribute to our wider Better Burma nonprofit mission. In addition to supporting our humanitarian work, we simply could not continue to provide you with the content and information through our podcast channel without the wonderful support of generous donors, listeners, and friends like you. Each episode provides access to one more voice, one more perspective, one more insight. Every donation of any size is so greatly appreciated and helps us to continue the mission. So we take this time to say thank you. To find out how you can contribute, visit insightmyanmar.org/donation.
Yaran nang kaya unya na dadu ya dana biar di ganen da de mana we kada besa ya na besa ya ho ba yaran nang da da yaran nang na yaran ya da yaran nang pada ga yaran nang.